Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here's your host, Adam Pfeiffer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the FTN DataCast. This is your substitute teacher, Scott Spratt. I'm a writer for FTN Fantasy. I do the start and sit, the touchdown regressor article, and some DFS over and under pricing type of stuff. I'm subbing in for Adam Pfeiffer, who is a bit under the weather today. I can assure you that the rumors are not true. He is not ducking this because his beloved Bills and Josh Allen lost to Zach Wilson on Monday night. Zero truth to that rumor. We hope that Adam can get better very quickly, get back to you again next week. But for today, I'm going to run through all of the major Sunday games, touching on some of the data observations that I have based on the week one of games and some of the offseason stuff leading into week two. I don't get into nearly the detail and nearly the nitty-gritty nerdy stuff that Adam does with his weekly read option series, so definitely check that out on ftnfantasy.com. It's incredible the level of depth he gets into, but I do some pretty extensive research that's probably a little bit more traditional fantasy skewed that I can hopefully teach you a thing or two about some of these games this weekend. So let's head to Sunday, get things started with Green Bay and Atlanta. A couple of interesting observations here. Jordan Love, obviously one of the hot fantasy names of the week after his four touchdown performance. But one thing I'd point out is that by facing the Bears last week, they were projected to be the second worst defense by DVOA. We now have Aaron Schatz working at FTN Fantasy and FTN in general, so check that out on the site. Some really cool observations there. DVOA is basically an efficiency metric that tells you how good teams are adjusted for the type of opponent they play and on the play level, so that you're not relying on points and other things that kind of tell you small sample results type metrics. This is more of a process type of metric. And so the Bears are a very friendly matchup. And really, I'm not sure that Love needed to do a tremendous amount to have that type of success in week one. In fact, he wasn't even in the top 10 in red zone pass attempts. So maybe not going to have a lot of four touchdown days going forward. I'm optimistic from a fantasy perspective, but I think this is a really interesting test against the Falcons in week two. The Falcons, who had their own a bit of a head-scratching week one, the Bryce Young at the Panthers threw them a couple of interceptions, made things easy on the running game. But I think the big kerfuffle was that Bijan Robinson had three red zone touches, just one red zone carry, compared to four for Tyler Algier, the fifth-round sophomore running back. I'm not sure that's a total fluke situation either, because Algier is bigger than Robinson is. He's more of a straight-line power runner. To me, if you were going to balance those two players from a touch perspective, it makes more sense to give Algier the red zone work. He ranked top 10 in yards after contact per attempt last season. It's just a really natural fit for his skill set. And Arthur Smith, probably more than anyone other than Kyle Shanahan, wants to run the ball. He ran the ball eight more times than he passed it in week one. But that's a game script thing to a certain extent, too. Like, he's not going to be able to throw 18 pass attempts every week and beat teams by multiple scores, right? So if you're thinking that the Packers are a little bit more of a tough test than a rookie quarterback in his first start, which I do, I think you could maybe still see a little bit more balance this week. I don't think that's necessarily going to hurt Bijan Robinson, a player that ran the highest percentage of his snaps from the slot on pass plays among all the running backs in week one. Like, I think he's going to be involved in a variety of ways that's going to help in fantasy and just be really fun to watch from a real world perspective. But I think that Tyler Algier is going to be involved. Like, he's got a specific skill set, one that from a red zone perspective is really friendly from a fantasy perspective. So I think both players are going to be involved. But really, if there's one Falcons player that I expect to bounce back this week and going forward for the rest of the season, it's Drake London, a player that I think was top 10 in target share in his freshman year. And while, again, Arthur Smith isn't going to want to pass the ball as much as other teams, I still think the volume is going to be there over the long term. It just didn't really happen in week one. I think it probably will happen in week two for the team. So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in this game, but expect a bounce back there. Expect Love to maybe regress going forward, but maybe run the ball too. This is a really fun game to watch. Next up, let's move over to the Raiders playing Adams Buffalo Bills. Bills probably in desperate need of a win after that Monday night loss to Zach Wilson, as mentioned, but I'm optimistic it's going to happen. There's three plus turnover type games are fluky for every player, but especially so for Josh Allen, who's just tremendously talented. The big thing here is with the tight ends for the Bills. I know we all expected Dalton Kincaid to be involved a lot, first round rookie tight end. I think the general thought pre-draft was that the Bills needed to add another pass catcher, and just where they fell in the draft, it made more sense to go after Kincaid, a pass-catching tight end, than it did to go after one of the wide receivers after the big-name guys had kind of already flown off the board there. But interestingly, both Kincaid and the incumbent tight end there, Dawson Knox, both played more than 80% of snaps. a lot more reliance on 12 personnel than typically involved. And interestingly, too, Deonte Hardy, the new slot receiver, comes in from New Orleans. You might know him as Deonte Harris. He changed his last name a couple of years ago. He got involved a lot as well there, too. So the Bills' offense, to me, while still having Stephon Diggs as the clear top guy and clear guy to roster from a fantasy perspective, it all looks really different and interesting to me in week one. I think that's something to keep an eye on going forward. If you're looking at this more from a fantasy perspective, I think Kincaid is going to be the more valuable of the two tight ends, but keep in mind Dawson Knox has also been top three in expected touchdowns among tight ends the last two seasons, and he might outscore from a touchdowns perspective Dalton Kincaid over the rest of the season. Being 15 pounds heavier just makes a lot of sense in the red zone, but kind of a lot of ins and outs there. The interesting thing is really how this is going to shake out for Gabe Davis. In my weekly projections, I have him as basically the most efficient receiver in terms of yards per target and touchdowns per target of anyone, but I think all you're really saying with that is that he's a bit of a downfield threat and he has Josh Allen at quarterback. He really wasn't as efficient from a real-world DVOA type of perspective last year, and so he may have missed his window to really emerge as a top 20 type of receiver in the league. I think this offense may be a little bit more diverse this season, and that'll make it fun to watch. It'll probably be good for Josh Allen despite the poor week one, but I'm not sure that's going to help Davis in terms of his counting stats this season. There might be some work for him, some for Dalton Kincaid, still some from Knox, you know, some for Deonte Hardy, just a lot of stuff going on there outside of the main wide receivers. I'll note this from the running back perspective, James Cook. I've been concerned that he is a little bit undersized for a traditional, you know, workhorse type of running back, but he saw a lot of run in week one, I think more than 60% of the snaps. And interestingly, Damian Harris, a player that I think is pretty talented or really was a couple of years ago in his Patriots heyday, he played fewer snaps than Latavius Murray, so I'm not sure he's going to be involved as much on offense as I expected. From a fantasy perspective, definitely leave him on any benches. Don't start him in your DFS plays, even the Bills stacks. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. For the Raiders, I don't really have as much interesting to note here. I'll point out, I think everybody probably knows this, Josh Jacobs had a quiet week one, but led running backs in the biggest expected touchdown shortfall in week one, had 1.5 expected touchdowns. He's going to be fine. He was top five in snap share and in carry share in week one. I would expect him to probably score on the ground here, and from a DFS perspective, I would probably use him as a run back for a lot of your Bills passing stacks. Probably going to go great there. Hopefully Jacoby Myers can get better soon as well, because he had a really interesting expanded role in week one before he suffered that concussion. Okay, let's move on to the Ravens at Bengals. The Bengals obviously had a disastrous week one. I think it's easy to blame that on the fact that Joe Burrow missed the latter half of the preseason because of an injury, just wasn't as, you know, practiced, didn't have the chemistry with his players, all of that type of stuff. But I'll mention, too, that I think the rain in Cleveland was a major factor there. Really, neither passing offense was doing much. And Cleveland is just a little bit better equipped to handle that with the power running game with Nick Chubb. So I just, you know, I think a lot of factors were contributing to the Bengals having a slow start to the season. I'm optimistic that things are going to bounce back this week for, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, all your usual suspects. I think the Bengals are a little bit easier to project in that perspective than a lot of other teams. The thing to keep an eye on really is probably more with Joe Burrow, a player that contributed a lot as a runner in, a little bit of a sneaky way last season, including five rushing touchdowns. If he's not fully healthy, then he may not quite be as willing to run the ball, which matters a little bit from fantasy. But in terms of like long-term for the Bengals, don't worry about it. Obviously, they started 0-2 last year. They're still going to be a Super Bowl contender by the time this is all done, so that's fine. For the Ravens' perspective, a lot of intrigue here. With Mark Andrews being out last year, the team was looking for who could be their number one option for the week, and then the fact that it is their wide receivers are very much turned over. So who knew exactly what was going to happen there? Well, I would say Zay Flowers happened. I've been joking a lot this preseason because I've seen people say that Flowers is the most talented wide receiver in Ravens history. I kind of think that's more of an insult than it is a compliment, just about like how bad the Ravens have been at drafting wide receivers, your Brashad Perrymans of the world, even Rashad Bateman, who I think is probably more injury than anything else, just has not worked out for the team over 10 plus years, right? Well, Flowers, man, in week one, he definitely delivered on his pre-draft promise. He had 10 targets, which led the team. He had the highest target share among all wide receivers. And you may be thinking, yeah, that's probably fluky with Andrews being out, but I'm not really sure it is that fluky. He was also top five among all receivers, not just among rookies, and yards after the catch in week one. And to me, just visually looking at the film, it's just like he just popped after the catch. So elusive, really quick twitch type of stuff. I really was impressed by what I saw. And I think I think I have optimism for him going forward, and I think it's pretty clear based on the week one snap shares. He and Odell Beckham were both on the field for more than three quarters of the team's snaps, and Rashad Bateman just really wasn't involved in the same way that he was when he was healthy even last season. So I think it's pretty clear who the top two receivers are for the Ravens. Keep that in mind from your DFS stacking perspective, but man, they could be really potent starting this week if Mark Andrews can get back on the field. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Potential shootout here between the Ravens and the Bengals in Cincinnati. So keep an eye on that. Speaking of shootouts, I don't know if everybody remembers this, but last year the Seahawks and the Lions played, I think, in week four, and it was like 45-42. It was an unbelievably incredible game, all kinds of DFS goodness. I'll say that from that perspective, this year, the Lions are probably riding as high as they possibly could. They closed incredibly well towards the end of last season. They just upset the Chiefs in Kansas City in week one. But the dirty little secret of that, I think, is that the Lions' offense, in particular passing offense, just hasn't been as explosive, frankly, since that week four game against the Seahawks last season. I think Jared Goff averaged fewer fantasy points per game than Russell Wilson since that game. Not that fantasy points are necessarily the biggest driver. He was more successful in terms of DVOA, but their offense outside of Amon-Ra St. Brown, it just hasn't really got the guys yet. I think Jameson Williams will really help that when he returns from his suspension, but honestly, we haven't really seen it on the field from him either, so it's a bit of a guess. And they're rolling out guys like Marvin Jones, who is a big body still, but I just doesn't have the juice that he had in his prime. Josh Reynolds is probably their number two receiver right now. They're really lacking in terms of playmaking, which is probably why they spent a top 15 draft pick on rookie running back Jahmyr Gibbs. But Gibbs, a bit head-scratchingly to me, played less than 30% of snaps in week one. He broke a tackle on five of his seven carries, according to FTN charting, which is bananas. Like, you know, small sample, obviously, but he looked like the real deal from that perspective. But another player kind of like James Cook, maybe even more extreme than James Cook, who was undersized for a traditional, you know, workhorse type of back. So like how I imagine this playing out is, you know, he was going to get involved this year, maybe have a Christian McCaffrey type of rookie year with 200 in total touches, but skewed more heavily towards receptions than a typical running back, 60 plus. I could see that absolutely happening. But David Montgomery maybe carrying the ball a lot more, carrying the load more in the red zone. And Montgomery kind of looked that way in week one on Thursday night. He got the touchdown. It looked like he inherited that Jamal Williams role that allowed Williams to have the most touchdowns in the league last year. You know, I'm not going to say 17 touchdowns for David Montgomery this year. Certainly, even with the huge advantage in terms of playing time in week one, the Lions just probably won't have nearly as many, you know, drives get to the 1 yard line specifically or inside the five where their running back is going to take those in. But man, I'd love to see some more Jahmyr Gibbs starting in week two. I don't think I'm ready to like fully bet on that from a DFS perspective. He would have to more than double it to really get involved to the level of like an RB2. But I have to imagine that's coming. It looked like he was their second best playmaker in week one for the small sample that is. But that's something to keep an eye at going forward. I got to hope that snap share rockets up for Jahmyr Gibbs. From the Seahawks perspective, I think it's the intrigue is about Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Missed a lot of the preseason with a broken wrist, but was able to play in week one and had more targets than Tyler Lockett, despite having a lower snap share. I think that's kind of compelling too. Like Lockett, he's obviously a speed guy and is a deep touchdown scorer, but I think it's easy to forget that he's done so much of that excellent work out of the slot, like that speed slot kind of role that it's a little newer to the NFL probably, but Smith-Njigba, not necessarily the same speed, but like he is a traditional slot receiver, at least played that way in college. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they end up using their receivers over the course of this season and whether maybe Smith-Njigba's ascension could lead to Lockett taking a little bit more of a back seat. I just wonder, you know, as much as I like Geno Smith and he was, you know, number one in adjusted accuracy percentage last year among all quarterbacks, according to reception perception, like I think he was for real. But I just don't know if he can support three receivers to that like fantasy relevant extent or like putting up those type of counting stats. So that'll be something to keep an eye on going forward. Next up, we have the Chargers at the Titans, a really interesting game for a couple of reasons. I think the Tennessee defense is a big part of this. So last year, they were extremely better in defending the run than the pass, basically top five in one and bottom five in the other, according to DVOA. And that skewed a lot of their opponents to throw the ball against them, even if they weren't necessarily in a pass-positive game script. And to me, that could really play right into the Chargers' hands this week. Justin Herbert, to me, looked reinvigorated with the new offensive coordinator. Herbert has maybe the best arm in football and had the second lowest average depth of target last year. Like, what are you doing, Joe Lombardi? Like, I get that he had the rib injury and maybe that influenced him for part of the year, but Herbert needs to be taking shots downfield the way that Patrick Mahomes, the way that Josh Allen does. And if he turns the ball over more because of it, so be it. Like, the explosive plays are going to make that worth it. And that looked to be the case in week one. He was even connecting deep with Keenan Allen, who just really doesn't have that kind of speed, never did, in fact. But yeah, I'm tremendously excited about their offense. And I think a little bit of the skew there, too, comes from with Austin Eckler dealing with a hamstring injury. They may need to rely a little bit more on the passing game this week. Joshua Kelly doesn't bring the same type of receiving chops to the position. And again, with the Titans defense being so stingy against the run, it may just all be in Justin Herbert's hands, which to me is going to be a lot of fun. For the Titans perspective, obviously, you're just hoping that Tannehill doesn't turn the ball over nearly as much as last week. This is just kind of like a random observation, but I love the quarterbacks that when they go wrong, it's just like haywire and they throw three or four picks in a week. That seems to be the case with Tannehill. Obviously, could have timed it a little bit better in that playoff loss a couple of years ago when they were the number one seed, but whatever. I'm not too worried about Tannehill from an efficiency perspective, but with the Titans, it's really intriguing. Their schedule is so unbelievably front-loaded. They play basically their five hardest teams by opponent's DVOA projections in the first 6 weeks of the seasons and then have a bye. So you're like, hey, like, if the Titans lose a few of these games, like, they may be ready to make the transition. They basically have one foot in the rebuilding world and one foot in the competing in 2023 world. But if they start the year 3-3 or 2-4, maybe even worse, then I think it's going to tip the scales. And I'll be really interesting to see what happens if they decide to put Derrick Henry on the market, for instance, or decide to move on and let Malik Willis or Will Levis take over at quarterback. This could very well be a team in transition by mid-October if things don't turn around very quickly for the team with their front-loaded schedule. All right, Bears at Buccaneers. The Bucs last week beat the Vikings, and I think they wanted a little bit more love for doing that. But I think most people that are into the data of this know that despite the fact that the Vikings were 13-4 last year, they were outscored, negative 3-point differential for the season. They were basically a neutral team in expected wins, Pythagorean theorem, however you want to look at it. And it just doesn't really mean what the Bucs maybe thought it meant. That said, I mean, I think a lot of their skill players are still incredibly talented. It would be better if they had more than Baker Mayfield at quarterback, but they may not quite totally be ready to blow this thing up. So I think they could be competitive. They are justifiably favored against the Bears this week. Justin Fields, it's weird. Like, he's a tremendous fantasy player, but I think he's going to have to hurt himself in fantasy in order to hopefully prove to the Bears and to everybody that he can be a franchise quarterback for the team going forward. He's going to need to run less, scramble a lot less. He's going to have to go through his progressions and throw the ball more and throw it more efficiently. Didn't happen in week one against the Packers, so it would be helpful for him if it started now. But yeah, it's tough. It also is tough because the Bears have the second worst projected defense by DVOA this year. He's just going to be in a lot of unfavorable game scripts going forward. It's putting a lot on his shoulders, but so far he hasn't really teased a lot as a passer to suggest that can work out for him. So this game is probably more interesting from a fantasy perspective, from a real-world perspective. I'm not sure either of these teams is really in the playoff mix going forward. The playoff mix, though, I think this next game probably qualifies. We got the Chiefs at the Jaguars. The Chiefs, obviously, with that upset last week, was kind of a tough scene with their wide receivers, Kadarius Toney dropping all the passes. I'll note that Sky Moore, despite basically being uninvolved in the passing game entirely, he and Marquez Valdez-Scantling were the two wide receivers that played almost all of the snaps. So from a projection standpoint going forward, it certainly looks like he would be the wide receiver to roster on the team. But Travis Kelce, I think, is poised to return this week, and he's obviously going to be the player that you want in this team. The running backs are honestly maybe even more interesting from a fantasy perspective, just from a snap share type of perspective. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the team drafted him in the first round a few years ago, I think because he was just an incredible after-contact type of player, but he's really been a disappointment in terms of yards after contact per attempt so far in his career. I just feel like it may be the case that NFL defenders are just bigger enough, faster enough, that at his size, he can't quite get that kind of push after the initial contact the way that he did, even in the SEC. So kind of a tough scene, but Edwards-Helaire, now healthy this year, missed a lot of the second half of last season, was involved in week one and actually had the second most touches on the team, really wasn't that far behind lead back Isaiah Pacheco, who, by the way, was a seventh round draft pick. So it's from a scouting perspective, you wouldn't necessarily think that Pacheco has that number one running back job on lockdown. But I think if you look at the snap shares, it tells a little bit of a different story here, where Edwards-Helaire played just 22% of snaps, which is dramatically less than even Jerick McKinnon, who was barely involved in week one. But as best I can tell, McKinnon is still the clear third down back. He was in all the third downs. It didn't really lead to a lot of targets that week, which I think it was just an odd game from a number of perspectives. But I think McKinnon can kind of pick up where he left off towards the second half of last season, when after the team's bye, he was, I think, fifth in catches among running backs from week 8 or 9 on towards the end of the year. So I think he could still be involved from a fantasy perspective. I wouldn't be ready to give up on him just quite yet. From the Jaguars, man, really impressive debut there from Calvin Ridley. Exciting to have him back in the mix. I've loved listening to Nate Tice on the Athletic Football Show talk about this, how he thinks Trevor Lawrence is like a better version of Matt Ryan, a timing-based quarterback, and that just really meshes really well with Calvin Ridley's route-running skill set. Ridley's a lot smaller than a typical number one receiver, but clearly it's not going to matter. He's going to be the guy for the Jaguars. I think it was obvious, really after the preseason, but definitely obvious after week one. And I think that creates a little bit of a ripple effect with the other wide receivers. Christian Kirk was the most successful of those from a fantasy perspective last year, but he is, you know, like more that speed slot type of Tyler Lockett type of contributor, I would say. And despite his massive contract that he signed with the team, he's the one that looked like he suffered the most from Ridley's ascension last week. He played just 60% of snaps. That's 50% less than he played in any game all of last season. And Zay Jones was still out there nearly 90% of the time. Jones, I thought, might be a bigger contributor in the red zone because he's 3 inches bigger. And with Ridley, again, being small too, you feel like the Jaguars are going to want to have a little bit of size in the red zone. Maybe not just Evan Ingram at tight end, right? But Jones was out there more in general. I feel like he actually might be the sneakier, better value, put up the better numbers the rest of the season than even Christian Kirk. So I think that's one to keep an eye on going forward as well. At running back, there was some consternation in the preseason that the Jaguars drafted Tank Bigsby to potentially be the red zone back for the team. Travis Etienne ranked top 10 in red zone carries in 2022, but had just 5 touchdowns, and everyone else in the top 10 had 9 or more. But this is a little bit of a yin and yang thing I like to talk about. I'm kind of obsessed with expected touchdown regression. And the thing of it is, when running backs fall short of their expected touchdowns, that is, they take a lot of red zone carries, a lot of carries near the goal line, but score fewer touchdowns than on average with those types of carries, it tends to regress positively in future seasons. So the thing of it with Etienne this year is, yeah, maybe Doug Peterson looked at him and was like, maybe this guy isn't the greatest after contact bat. Like, he's elusive but can't push the pile, like whatever the case may be. Maybe we'll get a second back in here. I still think he's going to score more touchdowns this year. I think he might see fewer red zone carries and still score 3 or 4 more touchdowns than he did last season. So optimistic from a fantasy perspective. You saw he had a breakaway touchdown in week one. That's just the second breakaway touchdown of his career for a guy that is incredibly elusive, has 4.4 speed. Like, he's going to have those going forward, and that's why I'm optimistic. But Bigsby did take the team's 2 carries in the red zone for the week. Not a huge sample, but he did run in a short touchdown. I think this is it, but like, I think there's a little bit of a marketing thing at play here, because his name is Tank Bigsby, right? Like, what do you think of in your head when you hear the name Tank Bigsby? It's probably a Derrick Henry looking dude, right? Well, here it is. He actually isn't very big. He is smaller than Travis Etienne by body mass index. I think they're actually the same height, and Etienne is maybe 3 or 4 pounds heavier. I feel like if Etienne could have been Tank Etienne, then people would feel completely differently about him, but that's neither here nor there. I think Etienne is going to be more or less the bell cow back for the team, may lose a little bit of the red zone work, but is going to be better all the way around and is going to be tremendous in this what looks like an incredibly explosive offense for a team that may be in the mix to win the AFC this year. Moving on, we got the Colts at the Texans. A little bit less intrigue for me here from a team skill perspective, but obviously the 2 rookie quarterbacks, very exciting. Anthony Richardson, wow. In week one, he really delivered in the way that we expected from a fantasy perspective. He was 2nd among quarterbacks for the week in carry share. He had a better carry share than any quarterback did in 2022. Small sample sizes apply here, but I think you can rightly guess that he's going to run the ball at least 100 times this season, maybe 125 plus. That rarefied air. Probably take a lot of work around the red zone with his kind of Cam Newton, Josh Allen type of size and skill set. Should be tremendous from a fantasy perspective. Among his receivers, it was kind of the Michael Pittman show in week one, which, like, that kind of jibes with what we've seen from this team previously. But slot receiver from Carolina, from North Carolina, the college, Josh Downs, was a little bit more involved than I think the buzz suggested in the preseason. Keep an eye on him there. But also Alec Pierce. Pierce saw just a couple of targets on the day, but is a big, deep type of threat. Like, imagine George Pickens, but without any of the fanfare. He actually had more contested catches than Pickens last year, was the only rookie to do so. And he played 90%+ of snaps in week one. It was basically he and Pittman out there all the time. And then when the team went into 11 personnel, Downs would join them coming out of the slot. So, like, this is maybe more of a deeper league fantasy type of consideration, but I wouldn't give up on Pierce yet. To me, his skill set really complements what Anthony Richardson does best, which is buy time by moving around in the backfield and using his big arm to throw the ball downfield. Pierce, of anybody on this team, is going to be the jump ball winner, maybe bringing in those explosive plays. Didn't happen in week one, but I could absolutely see that happening going forward. I'll mention, too, that in their backfield, Jonathan Taylor obviously on the PUP list, so not going to be able to play for a few weeks. But Deion Jackson ended up being the featured back. Whether or not that was the plan, Evan Hull got hurt. Zach Moss wasn't back from his broken arm yet. He had negative 66 DYAR, which is accounting stat, kind of similar to DVOA, but DVOA is the rate stat version. But basically the least effective day as a running back with receiving included, second worst in the history of that stat dating back to 1981. I don't want to put all of that on Jackson's shoulders because that is kind of a team stat masquerading as an individual stat. The fact that the defense didn't really have to respect the fact that they were going to throw the ball deep, like all of that kind of stuff, it contributes. The offensive line play, it all does. But he did fumble twice, 1.1 yards per carry. Ooh, it was a really rough debut. So long story short, expect a lot more Zach Moss in week two, assuming that he's ready to play from his broken arm. And this may be a team that needs to look at like a Leonard Fournette type, just to get somebody that's a little bit more capable in there in the short term until hopefully Jonathan Taylor can make it back in a few weeks. From the Texans' perspective, I think a little bit less intrigue here. I want to see more from CJ Stroud. He put up some numbers, but a lot of it was fueled by garbage time in week one against a pretty tough opponent in the Ravens. But from a skilled player perspective, I think Nico Collins was the most interesting. He had a really high target share for the week, was on the field as much as Robert Woods. He didn't have the year two breakout that we look for from a lot of wide receivers, but I think it's possible that there's a year three breakout there. Either he or Dalton Schultz, I feel pretty confident, is going to end up being the leading receiver for the team. So maybe a little bit of fantasy intrigue there, but don't overinvest. Obviously, with the rookie quarterbacks, can be kind of tough for a lot of this. All right, next up, we have the 49ers at the Rams. 49ers absolutely demolished a team that I had a lot of optimism for this year in the Steelers in week one. Their defense looks as good as it was last year when they were top five in defensive DVOA. They were top five in preseason projected DVOA on defense as well, so really good there. Luckily, Brock Purdy, I think, looked healthy. With their offense, they have so many good skill players. Like, it was a Brandon Ayuk week, but I could absolutely see it kind of whack-a-moling where, like, some weeks Christian McCaffrey scores two touchdowns, some weeks George Kittle scores two touchdowns, some weeks Debo Samuel scores two touchdowns. Debo Samuel actually saw a higher target share than Brandon Ayuk did this week. So, like, I wouldn't read too much into the fact that he is the specific player that scored two touchdowns, but, man, that offense is incredibly good as well. Most talented team probably in the NFL. I would expect them to go to at least the NFC title game, if not the Super Bowl this year. For the Rams, we all thought that they might be tanking, right? But, man, Stafford looked kind of back to his old pre-injury self. He was 11th in fantasy points per game 2 years ago in the Super Bowl season, but last year fell off from that standard, but was also one of the like three or four unluckiest quarterbacks from an expected touchdown perspective, which I think is probably a little bit arm-related, but also probably a little bit of bad luck, especially given that he only played half the season, didn't really have time for things to even out over time. I'm optimistic for Stafford this season. Hopefully he can get Cooper Kupp back soon, but Puka Nacua was amazing in week one. Also, Tutu Atwell, despite being like the tiniest man since Bryce Young, they were just running wild for the week. If you're trying to sort of handicap this from a fantasy perspective, I think Nacua makes the most sense to go with. Atwell, 55% of his receiving yards came on explosive plays of 20+ yards. That makes sense. He's a speed merchant. He's too small to really work the middle of the field in the way that some other receivers can. So I think he could be a kind of a more boom or bust type of player. Makes sense in a DFS stack, obviously, but just in terms of the player that's most likely to see more games with eight or more targets, I think Nacua is probably the one to go with there. Although keep in mind, he actually suffered an oblique injury in week one, a bit of a question mark heading into week two. All three of their big receivers, including Van Jefferson, played more than three quarters of the week one snap. So Jefferson could have weeks with 8+ targets as well. It's just a lot of intrigue there with the Rams this season. Next up, we have the Giants at the Cardinals. The Cardinals, yeah, they may actually be tanking. I'm not sure. I was kind of leading on them as kind of a comedy play, survivor pick last week to beat the Commanders, since everybody seemed to be on the Commanders. In the Survivor League that I'm in, I think 15 of the 17 teams picked the Commanders. And man, the Cardinals almost pulled that upset. But yeah, I think their passing game, less than 150 passing yards, could be anemic, really, until Kyler Murray hopefully is able to return at some point this season. It's going to make it tough for Marquise Brown to do much this year. It's going to make it tough for Michael Wilson, who I think, if not for the passing offensive difficulties there, would be like a really fun, surprising name at wide receiver. A third-round pick, less talked about than a lot of the other main guys, but played more than 90% of the week one snaps, is obviously a clear starter and is going to get some run this season. I just don't know if he's going to get enough work. I don't know if Rondale Moore is going to get enough work. Zach Ertz saw 10 targets. That was a bit of a surprise, but I think it could be tough sledding for all of them unless you're getting PPR credit. It's just, there's not a lot going on there. To me, James Conner, from a fantasy perspective, is the player that you would probably want to rely on there. He had the second highest snap share for the week. They just don't really have much behind him. Keontae Ingram's the number two running back, basically totally inexperienced, no pedigree there. So I think you can ride Conner from a fantasy perspective, but otherwise, not a lot to get excited about with Arizona unless Kyler can get back to the field. And maybe that could be good news for the Giants, who could really use a win after that 40-0 loss to the Cowboys last Sunday night. Not a lot of good stuff there, but I think the Giants are kind of very much like you would expect from a distribution perspective. It's going to be a lot of Saquon Barkley this year. I think Darren Waller will effectively be their number one wide receiver, even though he's technically a tight end. He plays like a wide receiver, right? Like his route participation rate is over 80%. It's basically he, Travis Kelce, and Mike Gesicki, randomly enough, among the tight ends that never block. So he's a wide receiver. They just call him a tight end. And I think that's probably going to be the way that it rolls out. I'm not sure any of the team's actual wide receivers are going to really make hay for themselves this year. All right, next up, Jets at Cowboys. Man, this game was going to be fun before the Aaron Rodgers injury kind of took the air out of it. With Zach Wilson, it's just going to be so hard for the Jets to do anything against that Cowboys defense, which was absolutely terrifying, honestly, last week on Sunday night. Breece Hall, he looked amazing, though. Coming off the torn ACL in the season, like, you always wonder if he's going to get back to that peak athletic level. Where Hall, he had a 10% explosive run rate. That's 15-plus yard carries last season. Small sample, obviously, but that was the second highest among running backs with at least 75 or more carries, and he was just ripping off the explosive runs last week, even though it was obvious to everybody that all the Jets could do was run the ball, but that's what he was still able to do. It's really exciting for him long-term. I kind of sneakily think he's actually a better player than Bijan Robinson, but that's probably neither here nor there. I'm not sure it's going to be quite as successful from a fantasy perspective in the interim, especially if Zach Wilson holds on to that quarterback job. The Jets don't add somebody else at quarterback. He only played like 33% of snaps week one. I think there's a pitch count involved. I think Robert Saleh has said as much. So it's going to be tough for him, you know, for the first month or two of the season if he's only getting 8 to 12 touches per game. He's probably not going to have that type of impact. He's probably not going to get a lot of 100-yard days. But long-term, I'm incredibly optimistic. The Jets just, they really have to find a quarterback. This is a doomsday scenario for Garrett Wilson, who was bottom five among wide receivers and on-target pass percentage targets last year. And it's hard to see that going any differently with the quarterbacks they have in the building right now. For the Cowboys, you know, you're not going to criticize the team for winning 40-0, but if you're wondering why Dak Prescott had such a quiet day, I think it was just bad luck with how the touchdown shook out. He had the biggest expected touchdown shortfall of the week, expected 2.5 touchdowns, but Tony Pollard took a couple of runs inside the two in for touchdowns. I think Kevontae Turpin took a red zone touchdown away from him. It's just one of those type of days. It's going to be better. I'll note that it's probably going to be better this week too, even against the Jets and their good defense, but he's averaged 3.3 more fantasy points per game at home than on the road in his career. He's really one of the big, like, three or four quarterbacks that has just fared dramatically better at home than on the road. Most of them play at home in domes, obviously, Kirk Cousins being another great example, but he's returning home to Dallas this week. I think that could make a really big difference for him. All right, for the Commanders at Broncos, last of the 4 p.m. slate here, I didn't really see enough of this game to make a great compliment about Sam Howell. To me, he was always the most interesting because in his last year at North Carolina, he became a bit of a surprise zone read quarterback. He had like over 150 carries and almost 1,000 rushing yards. And I just kind of wondered, is that going to be the style that he plays in the NFL? His build kind of makes it think like, I don't know if he could hold up to that workload, but he is pretty fast. And I wonder, given his marginal, I guess, prospect status. He was a fifth round pick. Maybe that would be a way for him to kind of make it stick, make it work for the team. But I think it's just too early to say. Obviously, they played a team in the Cardinals that may or may not be really trying this year. Terry McLaurin is number one receiver, is dealing with a turf toe injury. I just think there was a little bit too little to go off on to draw any major conclusions. I'll be interested to see this team going forward, maybe even playing a really good defense like the Broncos, like they will this week. For the Broncos, Javonte Williams, the running back, another player like Breece Hall coming off the torn ACL last year, actually had a ton of torn ligaments in his knee, really devastating injury. Played to a pitch count in week one as well, 45% snap share. I expect that to go forward as he gets more comfortable going forward this year. Williams actually broke the highest rate of tackles in his rookie year in 2021. And to me, he was like the next coming of Jonathan Taylor, you know, before that went sideways for Taylor too. But and then he injured his knee. I'm hopeful that he'll get back to his full strength and be able to put on that show, because I think he really is talented. He's like incredibly elusive, but also really big. Just like a really fun combination to be a potential top five back in the league. At wide receiver, I don't think we learned a lot here either. Hopefully Jerry Jeudy's going to be able to play this week, but I haven't seen confirmation of that either way. But Marvin Mims, I think an exciting rookie prospect, somebody that can probably take the top off defenses for the team in the long term. Even with Jeudy sidelined, he played less than 40% of the week one snaps. It was just a lot more of a, you know, distributed type of passing attack than I would have necessarily expected. So maybe Cortland Sutton, but I think a lot of the other stuff going on there, there's just not much to get super excited about, at least from a fantasy perspective. Let's hit on this last Sunday game and wrap this show up. Dolphins at Patriots, maybe saving the best for last. Like, obviously the Dolphins, what an incredible showing against the Chargers. So fun to see Tua Tagovailoa back and fully healthy. Knock on wood that he avoids the major head injuries, puts his judo training to good work, right? Tyreek Hill said on his podcast in the offseason that he wanted to have 2,000 yards this season. Like, he may have been a little bit too pessimistic. Like, trust your skills, guy. Like, I think 2,500 plus yards could be in the mix for that guy. He's just constantly open downfield. The team threw, I think they had maybe 14 explosive plays of 20 plus yards. It was the second most by any team in a game in like the last 20 plus years, basically this entire century. So yeah, this offense is incredibly exciting. I think all of the usual suspects, you know, the name Hill being the star of that show, Jalen Waddle being incredibly explosive as well. Raheem Mostert, the running back, super explosive. He and Devin Achane, I think maybe have the two fastest 40 times among running backs in the lead. And Achane, I think, could be back as soon as week two as well. So got a lot of explosive potential in the backfield as well. To me, the real surprise is just that Durham Smythe, the tight end, he barely played at all the last few years. Even last year, when Mike Gesicki was on the team, like a guy with some real wide receiver skill sets, like Smythe never played even as a blocker very much, but he played 100% of the snaps and it was about average from a route participation rate perspective. So Smythe could be a little bit of a surprise for the team as well, even though with a 4.8 40 time, he's basically half as fast as a lot of the other skill players on the team. But man, great to see the Dolphins. Kind of wonder if they're the favorites in the AFC East now. I feel like they kind of might be, at least if you can ignore the Tua Tagovailoa health thing. From the Patriots perspective, great to see them with a real offensive coordinator this year. I'm not sure that last year was quite the answer. Bill O'Brien, to me, looked a little bit better with it than week one. Mac Jones looked a lot more comfortable. I think Hunter Henry looks like he's going to be a major beneficiary. Henry averaged 14.6 red zone targets per season the first 6 years of his career, the healthy years. Fell to just 7 last year. Obviously, fell completely off of fantasy radars, just really wasn't involved from any perspective, but had a red zone target and a touchdown in week one. Excited to see him back. He basically doubled up Mike Gesicki's target share, which that may not mean quite as much as you think, since Gesicki basically runs a route every time he's on the field. But I think Henry is going to be back to his, you know, really good pre-2022 standard. Could be in the mix for a tight end one from a fantasy perspective and a big part of the team. The wide receivers are honestly a little bit more of a mystery. I mean, the big buzz this week was that a reporter had somebody from the Patriots staff put on record that Juju Smith-Schuster was like the fifth best pass catcher on the team right now. So we don't really know how this is going to shake out. I don't know if that was like a knee comment, the exploding knee situation. I don't know. Smith-Schuster said that his knee was fine this week, but I don't know. Some of these other rookie receivers, though, like DeMario Douglas in the mix in week one, Kendrick Bourne, big favorite of mine, he actually led all wide receivers in receiving DVOA a couple of years ago. And I think you can probably credit Kyle Shanahan with that. He's just like peppering him first down looks on third down over and over and over again. But I think the guy is very efficient. It's just not really an explosive type of player. Makes a lot of sense with their offense. Glad to see him get 10-plus targets for a week, although Devontae Parker being out may be a contributor there. But Kayshon Boutte as well. I couldn't secure both feet in bounds on that final catch on the last drive that maybe would have given the Patriots a chance, but he and Douglas were both playing, I think, 50% plus of snaps. So the Patriots wide receiver room may look very different than many expected at the start of the season. And maybe they found a couple of gems with some of these late draft picks and undrafted guys. I'll be excited to see how that unfolds as the season goes along. Well, for everyone that stuck with me, thanks so much. I enjoyed being your sub teacher. Again, hoping that Adam Pfeiffer is going to be back and healthy and ready to run this show again next week. But in the meantime, enjoy week two from a real world perspective. Enjoy it from a fantasy perspective, a DFS perspective. If you want to get into the nitty grittier type of stuff, looking at man zone splits, all the other great charting data at FTN, check out Adam's read option series on FTN Fantasy. It is an invaluable way to improve your knowledge as a football fan. I think you'll have a lot of fun looking at it. All right, thanks so much, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Datacast with Adam Pfeiffer. Be sure to follow your host on Twitter at apfeiffer24. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you next time on the FTN Datacast, where data drives the discussion.